Second Testament reading this morning is Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 to 37. If you wish to follow along, it's on page 5 in the second section of the Pew Bible. You have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, "You shall not murder," and "Whoever murders shall be liable to judgment." But I say to you that if you are angry with a brother or a sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or a sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, "You fool," you will be liable to the hell of fire. So when you offer your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or your sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or your sister, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are on the way to court with him, so that your accuser may hand you over to the judge, or your accuser may hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you've paid every last penny. You have heard that it was said, "You shall not commit adultery." But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It is better for you to use one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. It was also said, "Whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce." But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Again, you have heard that it has been said to those of ancient times, "You shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you have made to the Lord." But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
This is quite the gospel text. I might need another drink. Taken out of context, this kind of Bible passage turns into a message on super morality. As one commentator put it this week, did Jesus really have to die for the Ten Commandments on steroids? I'm going to tell you from the get-go this morning that this is not a sermon about morality, because there's something bigger and broader going on here. And it's this continuation of the identity destiny message from last week, the Beatitudes message from the week before, where we recognize that we are salt and light. We are blessed. So let's not lose sight of those declarations that we've heard over the past couple of weeks. As we wrestle with this text this morning, I'm going to focus on verses 21 to 24. So if you want to keep your pew Bibles open, Matthew chapter 5, focusing on verses 21 to 24. Because the way we handle these first few verses in the text help us as we continue to walk further on through the verses in this text. We can't read this text in a vacuum. This is happening in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 7. This is Jesus. Remember, he's on a hillside. There's 150 to 200 people with him. His disciples, probably the 12 disciples that he's called, plus those other followers who have become followers of this teacher who talks about being a person of the way, the truth, and the life. Last week we read, but we didn't really go deeper with verses 19 and 20, where Jesus says, "Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you," this is verse 20 of Matthew chapter 5, "for I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." As we enter into verse 21, let's remember the statement that Jesus has made in verse 20. That Jesus is talking about this righteousness that exceeds the scribes and the Pharisees. And I find it very interesting that when we read through the Gospels, whenever Jesus talks about people not entering into the kingdom or a body being thrown into hell, it's not usually aimed at ordinary people. It's aimed at the religious leaders of the day. And the religious leaders of Jesus' day are devoted to the law. They're devoted to spirituality. They want to protect God's image. But like I said with the children this morning, where they get into trouble is when they become rule keepers versus people keepers. That's the simplest way that I've been taught how to frame the Pharisees and the scribes. So how will we come to today's text? Do we come as Pharisees? Are we religious leaders who really like to keep and enforce the rules of religion? My experience in church culture land is that most people here in these places are not Pharisees. The people who come and devote their lives and their resources to the Christian faith of the local church are usually good people. People who found a sense of belonging in a church, people who are earnestly trying to grow in ways of faith and spirituality. So I'm going to try to ease the tension a bit in this text, because I want us to remember from last week where the word to us was, y'all are salt. You all are the salt of the earth. You all are the light of the world. So does it seem right that then you come back the next week and Ryan stands up and says, and you all are going to hell? So I've got to talk about hell for a couple of minutes. In Jesus' context, 2,000 years ago, the hearers of the Sermon on the Mount would not have heard the word hell and then thought of some red devil or red-faced henchman or a pit of flames with people eternally roasting on a rotisserie. So you got to get that image out of your mind when you hear the word hell here. The hearers in this crowd on this hillside might have heard the word Gehenna. Well, they heard the word Gehenna. That's what's used in the Greek text. They might have thought of the Old Testament, because the Greek word Gehenna is Gehinnom, which literally means the Valley of Hinnom, which in the Old Testament times was this place southwest of Jerusalem where religious people sacrificed things to gods, like the god of Baal or the god of Molech. And in some history texts, you'll read that even children were sacrificed in this valley. And if you read our First Testament text, you'll read that even King Ahaz, the son of David, as he wandered from the ways of God, two sacrificed children in the valley of Hinnom. It's a messy story for all of us. So in Jesus' time, Gehenna still carried this sense of being a cursed and unredeemed place, and had evolved to become a word that described the desolate, perpetually burning garbage, stinky heap outside of the city of Jerusalem. This was a place of refuse, a place where there were not very many signs of life. So when Jesus says, you will be liable to hell, verse 22, or it's better for you to lose one of your body parts than for your whole body to go to hell, verse 30, probably the you is not y'all, you being the salt of the earth, you being the light of the world. It's probably those yous whose righteousness is more concerned with rule-keeping than people-keeping. And secondly, hell is not a place of eternal conscious punishment, but it's a way of being that is void of life, light, truth, mercy, forgiveness, and grace. And that life of void can be here and now. Not only a life of void in a future space or future destiny. So these are the things I want us to hold in tension as we're talking about hell, as we read through the Gospels, as we continue through the Gospel of Matthew for the next several weeks and several months in the church lectionary. Whew. By the way, if you want to learn more about hell, come to youth group. Because on January 25th, our very own Alex and his friend Simon are going to teach, based on the curriculum that Jeremy's picked out for this year, a lesson called Why Did Jesus Go to Hell? Because they've been walking through the Apostles' Creed, and we know one of the phrases talks about Jesus going to hell. And so Alex and Simon, on the 25th of February, Friday night, here at Youth Group, we'll be teaching about hell. So you can come out for that. Then you'll get the full story. If you're wanting to read more, someone suggested a book called The Four Views on Hell, which has four different writers. And one of them is Clark Pinnock, who just passed away in the last year, and is one of our Canadian Baptist theologians who writes on one of the views of hell. So there's a book that you might want to get. Interestingly enough, as I was doing some research this week, one of the younger generation preachers in America named Rob Bell, and some of you might know of that name, Rob's famous for doing these Pneuma videos. He's famous for starting this mega church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's a famous speaker who does the Everything is Spiritual tour. But he's releasing a book in March called Love Wins. And the subtitle is A Book About Heaven and Hell and the Fate of Every Person Who Ever Lived. Wow, Rob. Good on ya. Look forward to that one. So there's a couple extra places you might go as you continue to reflect on Gehenna. So with all this swirling around, let's talk about verses 21 to 24. Because the focus here is relationship and community. And Jesus, on the Sermon on the Mount, this is the big theme. He's teaching his followers, his new disciples, as a community of faith, that they must pay attention to how they treat one another. Look at the if statements of verses 22 and 23. If you are angry, if you insult a brother or sister, if you say you fool, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, dot, dot, dot. Do any of these ifs trip you up? If they do, I'd say welcome to the human race. If, as you are living the way of Jesus in the world, you remember that something ought to be worked out, then reconcile. In this context, Jesus alludes to the reality that these if moments may happen in times of worship. And so maybe even this morning, during silent parts of this morning service, something has been percolating in your heart. Or maybe as you enter into this week and you have a quieter moment driving to or from work, or maybe you set time aside this week for a quiet prayer or reading a sacred reading in silence and solitude. Or maybe you come to the prayer chapel this week to sit in silence, to wait on God. Maybe in these moments you might remember that something ought to be worked out. I might add a plug for our confession prayer at this point too. That's why we do the confession prayer, because we live in a broken world. There are things that we have done and we've left undone each week that we come to God and say, forgive us. But you'll also notice that in every confession prayer, near the end of the prayer, there's a, yes, God, we're opening to changing our ways piece. Maybe you've never noticed that before, so I'll pull out your order of service. Even this morning, in the midst of confessing our sins, in the last few sentences, have mercy on us, Lord, not according to what we deserve, not because of, but because of your extravagant love. And then this phrase, and mold us into the people you would have us be. And mold us into the people you would have us be. If we remember in the midst of worship, in the midst of silence or solitude, in the midst of prayer, in the midst of reflection this week, that someone has something against us, or if we've sinned against someone and God is percolating that in our hearts by our spirit, then go and be reconciled with that person. I've called this sermon the so what of salt and light. And that's the so what. That if we're going to be salt, if we're going to be a people of welcome, of hospitality, of flavor, if we're going to be a people of light, if we're going to enter dark places and bring the light of mercy and truth and healing, then we do that as reconcilers. The so what of salt and light is that it goes out and lives the way of Jesus. Our ethic as followers of Jesus isn't a matter of rules. And whether we're a people who might have the label of angry or an insulter, an accuser, a luster, an adulterer, a swearer, Jesus says there is more to being human than just keeping rules like the scribes and Pharisees. That it's about following God and being reconciled to your brother or sister. And perhaps we hear the echoes of our First Testament reading here, where God sets before us life, prosperity, or death and adversity, and God says, choose life. And so this week, as we embody the kingdom of God, as we be a people of salt, as we be a people of light, what can we do to bring this dream of God to earth versus bringing the ways of death and Gehenna, the ways of hell to earth? And so as we close with today's text, in 1 minute of silence, I want to give you a beginning time of reflection as you enter into the week. Listen for a call to be reconciled. And if that call stays with you as you move through the week, then ask God to show you the time or the place or the way be reconciled with someone else. That one another might not be in this place, might not be in this community of faith. They might be at home, at school, at work, in another city, another country. But for a quiet moment, as we continue to move through the season of Epiphany and say to God, let there be light, reveal to us, God, what you want me to press into or step into in these days and these weeks, let's be open to how God might send us out as reconcilers this week. Can you imagine 160 or 180 reconciliations happening this week or this month because of this faith community? I think that's a wow moment. So let's begin with 1 minute of silence where we listen and reflect on what this text, what Jesus, what the Spirit might be inviting us to be this salt and light, to be reconcilers this week. And after a moment of silence, I'm going to close with a prayer that hopefully carries us well, the prayer of St. Francis of Assisi. So 1 minute of silence, and then we'll close with prayer.